I can. Soldiers have their sorrow, the wretched have their rage. Pray for the aged, it's the dawn of another age, of another age, of another age, of another age, of another age.
Welcome to Radio Freakonauta. I'm your host, Kevin Annett, with my co-host, Ryan Gable. Welcome back. We're here every Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern, at bbsradio.com, Radio Free Kanata. You can find us at kanatarepublic.ca, and we are here holding up the flag of common law and the global republic of equals. This is what we're all about. And we're going to be talking today about a whole whack of things, but I wanted to once again thank the increasing number of you who are writing in, giving us ideas and direction for the coming months. There's two, before we get back into what we were discussing last week, we are going to go over just a couple of news items, which I thought are quite relevant and interesting. First of all, there's a, for all you Canadians listening, there is a federal election coming up on October 19th, although I prefer to call it not an election, but an erection, since we all know who gets screwed in the course of the these things. Sorry, Mom. But anyway, October 19th, Canadians are going to the polls to decide which gang of crooks gets to take an oath of allegiance to a foreign monarch, not to the people of Canada. So one of the things that our various groups in different cities in Kanata are planning on doing leading up to the election is not only go to all candidates' meetings and ask some embarrassing questions, like why, for example, should we elect you at all when you take an oath of allegiance not to us, but to the Queen of England, when 69% of Canadians don't want any more ties with the Queen of England. And one of the things it was suggested in Ontario, which is one of our more active areas, some of the people are actually thinking of setting up their own ballot boxes and having people vote yay or nay for a republic and then release the results. So in other words, we're going to be doing our own parallel election to the existing one, and we'll be doing community balloting for the republic. And this is one of the ways that we're going to show people there is an alternative. So that's something, you know, we're going to talk about. And if you have any ideas or plans for that, please write in. The other news item that I think is very much worth talking about, of course, is this development in America leading up to the visit of Jorge Bergoglio, a.k.a. Pope Francis, Frankie the Cleaner, as they call him on Argentina, since he laundered a lot of money and children for the Catholic Church down there. There's, in fact, I'm looking at a picture right now of Pope Francis when he was a younger guy. Back in during the dirty wars in Argentina, he's walking arm in arm with the dictator of Argentina, Jorge Videla, a brutal general who was responsible for the murder of tens of thousands of Argentinians, including some of Jorge's own priests when he was Archbishop of Buenos Aires. Well, there they are walking arm in arm, big smile on their face, because they had just come out of a cabinet meeting where Jorge used to attend. One of the things Bergoglio used to talk about was ways to traffic the children of political prisoners, just like the Catholic Church did in Franco's Spain, made millions, hundreds of millions of dollars trafficking the children of political prisoners. Now, this helps the dictator because it takes the children of all these dissidents and raises them as good little fascists, and so undermines any political opposition in the future, and it makes a horde of bucks for the Catholic Church. Now, the same thing went on in Argentina. Jorge Bergoglio helped devise it and run it for many years. That makes him a war criminal under international law. But the war criminal is coming to America September 21st, 24th, to speak to the United Nations and to the United States Congress. And, of course, all the politicians are so enraptured, including supposed left-wingers like Bernie Sanders. He's just so happy the Pope is coming. Well, there's groups in Philadelphia, New York, and Washington, D.C. I've been speaking to. And they are organizing not protests, which, remember, last week we talked about how protest tends to hand over your energy to somebody else. We are, and the groups we work with in those three cities are talking about organizing a four-day public mourning from September 21st to 24th, during which time people will not only fast and pray, but they will not cooperate with the system. They won't go to work, they won't purchase anything, and they will boycott all the religious services, including the big one being held at St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York when Bergoglio was there. Some of them even talk about taking a public pledge of repudiation, where they're going to repudiate the Catholic Church, and they're trying to revive this group that was around a couple of years ago called Not in Our Name, which is actually a group of Catholic and Protestant clergy that are dissociating themselves from the Vatican and any church involved in child trafficking and these crimes against humanity. So those are all really encouraging developments, and if people want to learn more about that stuff and connect up with these activities, especially during the third week in September in America, please write to us, republicofkanata@gmail.com. That's my blurb for now. Ryan, welcome, and any comments about any of that?
Well, absolutely. As usual, you see not just the process of national reorganization in Argentina that was run by the military junta and had connections to the Catholic Church, but the same networks were busted in Chile, and of course you mentioned General Franco's dictatorship in Spain. So we see these connections that are intertwined all throughout the world, not just in one country or another. And if we begin to, as we talked about last week, understand this and not put our energy into protesting and working within the system, then I think we can take a step back, start our own system, and really begin to start our own process of reorganization into the Republic. And I think that's what we're already doing.
Right. Now, I want to just read a paragraph from this paper we were discussing last week, The Purpose and Nature of Our Struggle. In any successful revolution, the personal awakening of individuals inexorably causes a collective ripple effect in many other hearts and minds that generates a new kind of group she. Now, remember, she was that kind of hidden energy that propels everything we talked about. This generation of a new group she is one that is unalterably opposed to the energy of the rulers. This new energy system is a living and working counterculture that actually draws energy and power away from the rulers and their system and returns it to the people, provided the people can hold on to it as a group by retaining their own new and separate identity. Now, that to me is something I want to talk with you a little bit and for the sake of the listeners as well, because this is historically, I think, the problem. Even when people make a shift to a new kind of society, a new way of thinking, new institutions, they tend to start thinking and acting in terms of the old patterns. And they can't hold on to their separate identity and end up becoming the old again. And, people often joke saying, there's no point in revolutionary change because you just get one new group of tyrants replacing the old. That's because the people as a whole haven't held on to their own identity, that we are the motive force of history, not some ruler, not a king, not a pope, not some invisible force somewhere. It's right in our own hands and in our own energy among ourselves. So let's talk a little bit about that, Ryan. Any thoughts?
Yeah, well, I mean, as people get older, I think they tend to be more kind of stuck in their olden ways. People are stuck in their conventional methods of thinking. And I mean, I don't know what your thoughts are on how we approach this in terms of establishing our own republic, establishing the people's assemblies and whatnot. How do we approach the general masses? Do we go more towards the younger crowds, or do we try to attract some of the older people of society to kind of help us out? How do we go about that, seeing that a lot of times people, as they become older, become much more enslaved by the system to a point where they'll actually fight to protect it against all logic and reason?
It's really an interesting question because from my experience over decades now doing this work, it's hard to generalize in terms of any group, including age. I've met some of the most amazing people who are old. My classic example is when I was 21, unemployed in Hamilton, Ontario. There was this guy, he used to conduct a one-man picket of City Hall. His name is Don Epperson. He was 78 years old. And he was an old radical going back 50 years. And he loved to do these one-man pickets, confronting anybody. Any injustice, he felt right at a gut level. And he was always out there, even if it was only him. I remember at age 21 being inspired by this guy, almost 80, that he had a lot more spirit and fighting spirit and outrage than most of the people I saw, around me in my 20s. And so I think it's really, like I say, when you're in touch with your own heart and soul, it doesn't age, it's eternal. And you just have to realize that, we are in this for the long haul. It's not something that's going to be fixed in a few actions it's unfortunately the culture, the quick fix culture we're raised in, to think that there are these easy answers, but they're not.
Right.
You know, to create a new society, we're in it for the long haul, and it's a lot of hard work. It's like working on a farm. People have a romanticized view of what that is. It's hard, dirty work every day, and that's what the work we're doing is as well.
Right. It's not a glamorized lifestyle, but if you truly want to be free, you truly want to have liberty, you have to fight for it. You can't sit back and let somebody tell you that you're free and yet have your rights and your liberties trampled over under the guise of some, you know, glitter rhetoric that, you know, you're able to have these perception of rights. I was actually walking in the city here the other day, and I met these people that weren't really doing a protest. They were doing more of a campaign to get people aware of this bill that was going through the Congress here in Idaho. And there were three people there, and they were talking about the Falun Gong, which was a peaceful spiritual movement in China that was banned, and how the government takes the members of they basically torture members of this religious group, and they take organs and they harvest them and they sell them, and they use them for foreign dignitaries, people that come to the country, you know, Westerners that come to the country on vacation. They need an organ, they'll take it from these people. And as I stopped by and talked to them for probably 45 minutes, and there were others that would come by and they would at least look at the literature, get an idea of what was going on. But a mass majority of people, when they try to hand out a flyer and say, would you like to sign this petition to stop organ harvesting? Most people would say, oh, I don't care. It doesn't matter. And that's the kind of general mindset we have to also understand, that most people don't see that there's other issues going on in the world because they're so numb by medication, they're so numb by television, they're so numb by food and entertainment, that they just focus on that entertainment spectacle, thinking by that subconscious, constant repeating of rhetoric that they're free, they're free, they're free, they're free. You don't need to fight instant gratification. Just take. There's no responsibility. People don't see the problem until they face it for themselves. I think it's like Martin Luther King said, I'll paraphrase, people don't know what racism is until they see it. And people don't know what these problems are until they experience them, whether that's child trafficking or whether that's some of the other issues we face with the stomping of the boot of tyranny on our liberties. Those are my thoughts.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's very interesting you mentioned the Falun Gong, because they have a big presence in Vancouver outside the Chinese embassy on Granville Street. And it's really interesting watching them, because I went up and spoke to them. There was about half a dozen of these folks. They were just sitting cross-legged outside the embassy, apparently just praying. And it's quite the opposite of the way we in the West operate. We attack, we give our energy out at the adversary, and the dance there is that they take it. Because even the most militant
right.
protest, the assumption is, well, you have the power, we're demanding you give us something. And so energetically, despite all the militant and radical talk, you're actually handing your power over to the authorities. Whereas these people were doing the opposite. They were taking it and it's interesting when you look at the translations of Jesus' description of nonviolence. He doesn't mean passivity. Actually, the words in Greek that he uses to connote nonviolence and non-cooperation means do not be like your enemy. Not do not fight them. He said do not be like them. Turn 180 degrees around and be in a different way. And that's the energy system we're talking about. We are literally taking the initiative from them. Best example being, look at what's going on these days in the Catholic Church. They had to create a massive public relations effort called Jorge Bergoglio, Pope Francis, because of the fact that a bunch of us all over the world, not very many, but we set the agenda. We said child trafficking, child murder is going on in the Catholic Church and has been for centuries. So what are they doing now? Making this child trafficker from Argentina look like a good guy in response to the energy we had established. And this is really important for, it doesn't matter how many you are. It's the kind of counter energy you're creating. And that's what I noticed in the Falun Gong people. One interesting thing, too, about the organ harvesting, the Chinese military get a cut for every person that they shoot, every body they provide, and they execute 2,000 to 3,000 people a year is the latest statistics I saw. They harvest those organs, they get a percentage of that, and what's interesting is this: we have a lead on the fact that the same companies harvesting those organs are the same ones operating the private prisons in America. These multinational private prisons are also involved in the human trafficking and organ trafficking business. So, you know, when obviously they're against the death penalty as well in America, or in favor of the death penalty, what am I saying? In favor of it, because they as many people as it can cram in their prisons and kill off, they profit from.
Absolutely. We have the highest incarceration rate in the world here in the U.S., even more than all the people that were in the Soviet gulags. We've got more people in prison, and half of them are imprisoned specifically because of nonviolent drug offenses related to marijuana possession, not anything else, but just simple possession of marijuana. And then it turns out that, of course, there's a cultural targeting of certain ethnic groups and races, such as the black population, who see, I think, a 63% incarceration rate of blacks over any other group for nonviolent drug offenses. So obviously, you know, those groups are targeted more than others.
You know, in the news a couple of months ago in the States, there was a judge who was actually arrested and tried and convicted for colluding with these private prison companies. He was sentencing minors, young kids as young as 14 or 15, he was sending off to prison to profit his fellow shareholders, because he was a stockholder in one of these companies. And it was a little deal going on between the judge and the company. He was providing the bodies. And he was caught in the act, and as usual, they threw a little fish to the crowd. But what's not being said is that there are major political interests in America that are also involved in this in both parties. And we actually, I'm just confirming these names. I don't want to just start blurting out names without evidence. But there's a number of senators and congressmen who have been linked to these prison corporations as well. We do know that Hillary Clinton's backer, George Soros, his money has been going into these private prisons as well. Ironically, he also runs Human Rights Watch, which is kind of a supposed international human rights, monitoring agency. But he's also involved in these human rights violations in prisons.
He was behind the Black Lives Matter movement, and he funded $33 million to groups to create these types of violent protests in both Baltimore and in Ferguson. During the riots, a lot of that was funded by Soros' money that went to some of the organizations and what they call rent-a-crowds, where you can pay a bunch of people to go and chant slogans and rhetoric and cause destruction, which is what the NYPD and the federal government through the Justice Department did during the Trayvon Martin riots down in Florida, and also at the Occupy protests in New York City, where they'd have they take homeless people off the street, that give them drugs, and then they'd send them into the audience to just create a mess, tip over cars, and then they would blame that on the protesters as if it was their fault.
That's right, and you know, one of the aspects of the HARP technology as well is, of course, that can be artificially induced in whole populations, and there's a lot of data about that out now. We could do a whole show on HARP, of course, but
absolutely.
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you're talking.
I was going to say that, yeah, I've actually done a couple of shows on that. I've written a huge chapter in my book about HARP. It's not just in Alaska. There are some in Russia. There are some facilities in South America. And they have the ability not just to create a type of mind control through the blanketing of electromagnetic waves or ELF waves, but they also have the ability to superheat the atmosphere and artificially create earthquakes, volcano eruptions, and other what we might call natural disasters, which in a lot of cases are being used around a lot of parts of the world, I think also in the U.S., to an end of Agenda 21. But, you know, again, that is kind of another show, but that's just a thought that I had on HARP.
Right. Now, one of the things we like to talk about as well is what people can do. And I think, you know, when we're talking about all of these activities, the first response of any of us who get angry and outraged about this is want to get out there and do something. Well, one of the things we're realizing in the whole Republic movement, we're learning this. We've learned this in Kanata over the last year. We've attempted in a number of the areas of the nations to organize active groups on the ground. What we found so far is that about well over 90% of the people are holding back. They are in a passive stance, waiting for somebody else to take the leadership. And we realize that what we need to do before even forming public groups is we need to be training people. We need to be holding workshops and gatherings where people can get very in touch with themselves and each other as a group and understand what are our fears, what are our limitations, how can we overcome them. Train them in practical skills as well as a spiritual discipline, because we can't really go out in the world and engage with this stuff unless we're very aware about this whole reality of she, how it's dissipated from us, how we hand it over unconsciously, and how on the alternative we have to take it back. Now, one of the things I want to throw out here, you know, for your thoughts, Ryan, are these things. Looking at some of our the sources of how we hand over our energy, whether that's mental, psychic, spiritual,
financial,
whatever. Yeah, exactly. Taxes. There's four aspects of this I want to talk about. The first most, and some of the writing that's been done on, but this is very interesting. One of the most basic sources of the loss of our own she, of course, is sexuality and the way it's created in our society, in which it's not on the basis of intimacy or knowledge of another person, but rather pornographic imagery. And pornographic imagery is widespread. It constitutes over 60% of what's actually on the internet now, especially child porn. But what it is, it's the most effective energy-sucking tool around, because you're handing over the most vital base chakra energy of yourself to this outside agency, to an image, to, it's, you know, this form of psychic masturbation, if you like. And it's that energy depletion which is happening at a very foundational level, especially in the male population. Second is, and you see this a lot, when you see the visible triumph of evil. You notice how there's more and more reporting of how all these royals in England and all these people all over the world are caught in these child trafficking networks. And the internet's filled with all these stories. The net effect of that is to make people despair at a basic level. It's, oh yeah, they've got away with it again. What can you do about it? They can go rape and kill anyone they want and they get away with it. And that was the purpose of this Truth and Reconciliation Commission in Canada about the residential school genocide. It said, look, we committed mass murder on thousands of children. Not one of us was, this is the church and government talking, not one of us was ever prosecuted. We never went to a day in court. We got out of it by paying off the victims, and we made ourselves look good. And we issued an apology, and now we buried it. That's telling the survivors, you can never win against us. And the net effect is massive energy sucking going on, and they are empowered at our expense. So we have to be very careful about how we raise issues and how we frame them, because we can inadvertently be handing over that energy and recognition to the rare ones who have got to be brought down by ignoring their system, by pulling out of it, by creating something different, and on that basis of strength, then arresting them, then putting them on power and taking down their power and stopping them.
That's right, Kevin. I actually don't know if you saw this from the Mirror UK today. There was an article up, which is, I think, kind of along the lines of what you were just saying, but it talks about a VIP pedophile ring of abused teenage boys that took place inside of Buckingham Palace. Did you get a chance to look at that?
Oh, yeah, but this is part of the ongoing reports, and it's not, it doesn't constitute some kind of victory, like, oh, we're finally exposing this. It's deliberately released by them. Because
it's almost like a mocking.
It is. They're mocking. They're laughing at everybody. They're saying, what are you going to do about it? Let's hold that thought. We're at the bottom of the hour. I'm going to just introduce these two little bits we're going to play now. One of it is from a talk I gave in Toronto in 2011, just a little bit of my own history in the Republic and our family history, followed by a very cool song from the 1600s called the Digger Song. The Diggers were a group during the English Revolution that was trying to seize the land and hold it in common for the poor. They represented the radical wing of the English Republic, and here's their song after My Little Burb.
Before we go on, I want to acknowledge one of my ancestors, Philip Annett, who came here with his father and my other ancestors in 1820, because my great-great-great-great-grandfather had been a Waterloo veteran, a British Army officer who was given 200 acres of somebody else's land in Upper Canada, because they wanted to make sure it was settled with politically and religiously reliable people. So any British officer got all his land. And I often say, well, this is maybe my payback to the people there to kind of make up in some small way for the fact that we got your land in 1820. His son, Philip Annett, took part in the uprising in 1837. William Lyon Mackenzie, that you don't get taught much about in school, the attempt to overthrow what was called the Family Compact. The small political, religious, and corporate elites that ran this country, and I believe still do run this country, because the 1837 rebellion was crushed and a lot of their leaders hanged, Mackenzie went in exile into the States. But my great-great-great-grandfather, Philip Annett, lived down near Waterford, and he picked up his, you know, the family legend tells us about him picking up his rifle and his wife getting really angry at him because he took away the only rifle with which she had to protect herself at night from the wolves that were around the cabin. But he went off, and they tried to reach York here to join Mackenzie, and they didn't get there in time because by then it had been scattered and broken by the local Tory militia. But I acknowledge the fact that what Philip and others tried to do was to stop the thing which would one day cause the genocide of Native people in the residential schools. Because that revolution was defeated, because we did not get real responsible government, you had a situation set up with the church, the Catholic Church in Quebec or Lower Canada, the Anglican Church here, were given absolute monopoly over the society. As a matter of fact, if you were a free church missionary, that's why you had to go west, because you weren't allowed to legally preach, just like in England, unless you were a Church of England or a Roman Catholic Church minister. So as a result, the power of the church became absolute in Canadian society. And that's why when the residential schools were set up in the 1880s, with the Canadian Pacific Railway linked the country, and the ruling class here had to solidify their power because the Americans were trying to grab the whole West Coast, they had to settle that area quickly. So they turned it over to the church. With that kind of absolute power, they established these so-called residential schools, which caused the death of 50 to 100,000 children over a century in a planned system of genocide. Because they know, like all over the world, the way you destroy a culture is you destroy the women and the children and that bond, that essential bond that's the heart of any vibrant culture. And the effect we know on the streets of Vancouver and all over, on these streets here, as we'll talk about today.
You noble diggers all, stand up now, stand up now. You noble diggers all, stand up now. The wasteland to maintain, seen cavaliers by name. Your digging does maintain, and persons all defame. Stand up now, stand up now. Your houses they pull down, stand up now, stand up now.
And that's the Digger Song from 1649 in England. And it's really so interesting. While I was listening to that, I had this image, of course, back then, a lot of the people digging the land, tilling the soil, growing the food, most of the people in England, they were illiterate. And these groups of people would go around singing these songs to inspire them with a message about, you know, who their enemies were and how they all had to stand together. Kind of reminded me of like what Jesus must have done, you know, talking around to small groups in the country. All of his messages aimed at the same kind of people, the agricultural laborers and the people owning a bit of land, against the landowners and the gentry and the priests and the lawyers, same old enemy over the centuries. It's amazing. So anyway, I thought that would help inspire us. And I also had another little, I wanted your comments first, Ryan, and then I've got another beautiful little story from today I wanted to share about that. Go ahead.
Yeah, that reminds me of last week when we were talking about the same subjects, and we talked about how instead of complying to the way that the system is, we were talking about how not just turning the other cheek, turning 180 degrees the other direction, you know, the true kind of a secret teachings of Jesus, if you will, but also, you know, instead of protesting violently or, you know, picking up your proverbial pitchfork and torch, but to dance and to occupy these places and to spread energy. And we're talking about the Falun Gong earlier, how they just kind of set peacefully and took the energy from these institutions and people rather than fought them and gave them more power. So those are my thoughts of dancing and singing are definitely two ways to do this.
Exactly. And, you know, I saw, you know, in the part of that talk I gave in Toronto, I mentioned how the aim of any genocide is to destroy the mother and child, the essential bond between the mother and the child, because that's the basis of the future of any culture. I was on the bus today, and sitting across from me were a black mother and her young kid. There was a little, the three of them, there was a little baby in the carriage, and the young daughter, she must have been about six, and the mom, she was probably in her 20s or 30s, quite poor, just sitting there. And the young daughter was making these really weird gestures. She had a really angry face, and these semi-sexual gestures, like there was something very odd going on in her. And they had this kind of aura of despair all around them. And then all of a sudden, the little girl got up and gave her seat to an old man who sat down next to them, a white guy, an older white guy. And her mom got her to go around to the other side of the carriage. And the two of them started looking at the baby in the carriage. And the mom and the little girl put their chin on the kind of handle of the carriage and just gazed down at their daughter and little sister, right? And suddenly, this amazing look of just joy came over their face, especially the young girls. And that previous kind of anger left her, and there was just this beautiful love in her eyes for her little baby sister, right? And that just broke through everything. And the old guy, grumpy guy sitting next to them, looked over, and he began to smile too. And then other people around the bus noticed it, and they all, it wasn't just a smile. There was a warmth that came over people. You could see right in their heart. And I realized that is the bond right there, the mother and child bond, the basis of, you know, of love and God, really.
I think that was the basis of a lot of ancient religions that venerated the goddess that were vehemently suppressed by the Catholic Church.
Exactly. And what I really noticed there was that one drop of that is like one drop in the desert of water suddenly creating a massive forest. That's what love does between people. It returns us to ourselves. And it doesn't matter how oppressed and messed up those people are on the bus, they all responded right away. And that's our hope, right? Triggering that in people, bringing us together on that basis, we're unbeatable at that point. Anyway, I wanted to share that.
Absolutely. I mean, that's just part of not just the mother connection to the child, but just the absolute beauty of nature in and of itself can take you away from those. You mean, you can get very overwhelmed researching and reading and talking about what we talk about every week. But if you just kind of go outside, leave your phone inside, leave all your electronics aside, and just go outside in the environment, go outside in nature, and just, you know, go down by a stream, go in the forest, something, you know, that negativity, that overwhelming stress and anxiety, I think starts to, typically it melts away pretty quickly, and you just get a really good sense about everything. And I think that our modern types of cities and the modern ways that we live have really cut us off so much from nature, it just causes that much more stress and anxiety. And of course, the byproduct of the civilization that we live in, the society kind of presents us with this idea that, well, we're technologically advanced. If you don't want to live like this, you're scared of science. And it's not really like that, because science has proven so much that we have such a strong connection to nature that by breaking it and by breaking away from, you know, the natural flow and the natural cycles of the moon and the sun, that alone creates sleep deprivation, insomnia, and can create serious illness if we're disconnected from Mother Earth.
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring that up, too, because it's part of this whole strategy we're finding. Most of the people who have responded to the Republic live in small towns around the country. And my opinion is that we have to work from the outside in. We've got to build communities based on the land to rejuvenate people. And from then we go into the cities, because people are too atomized and messed up in the city to come together at all. We've tried time and again to bring people together, and it never lasts. People fall apart. They start fighting, infighting. They've got all these other distractions. They turn on their little devices. They're gone. We have to root people again in the natural law. And that means the country. That means the natural world, not just children. And fight to the death for our children, no matter what it takes. What I saw on the bus today reminded me of a little poem by W.H. Auden, who's a beautiful man, was a beautiful man. It goes like this. In the deserts of the heart, let the healing waters start. In the freedom of his days, teach the true man how to praise. I thought that was beautiful, because it's, all of us carry that desert, but it's there that something different can emerge, right? Right in those moments of despair, suddenly there's this other.
Absolutely, Kevin. You sent out, I think we had an email this week, something called the Church Stoppers Manual. I wanted to ask you a question about that, if I could.
Sure.
On the manual that we have out, it lists several different ways to essentially, as it's called, stop the church. And the first one is it says money from collection, take the money from collection plates and give it to the poor. I think that when people look at, let's say, the Church Stoppers Manual, they get an idea like that, they hear you or I say it, they might get scared that if they just grab the money, people are going to think they're taking it for themselves and someone's going to call the cops. How does that work? Have you ever been with somebody that have done that? Have you ever done that?
Oh, we've done these reclamations. I'll tell you how it works. We don't just go in and grab the money as individuals. We never do anything as individuals. That's the point. We announced to the church several weeks in advance that as a group, we're going to come in and feed the poor the way you're meant to, according to the gospel. And we urge them, first of all, we give them the chance. We say, we think you should take your collection money. And here, you know, for example, when I was in the United Church, a quarter of all this stuff in the collection plate immediately went to the national office. So a quarter of it's gone to help the national organization. And the rest of the local money is used on things like, you know, repairing the church bell, paying the janitor. I mean, like all the administrative stuff, very little of it goes to actually helping people. There was actually a figure that showed in the year 2013, only 0.8%, that's less than 1% of the revenue brought in by the Catholic Church in America, went to charity. So where does the other 99.2% go? Well, we know where, into the corporate sleeves and into the Vatican Bank, etc. But what you say to people is, it's you got to guys got to turn yourselves around. Start giving that money to all these homeless people and other people outside, or make a food bank, or do something, okay? And if you're not going to do that by this certain date, we have the right on two grounds to come in and do it for you. And the first ground is that it's called what's a necessity defense under the law. When there's people suffering and there's a crime going on, you have the right to break the law in order to stop it. The crime is those people are putting money in a collection plate that's now going to fund criminal bodies, convicted criminal bodies, Catholic, Anglican, and United Church in Canada, the Episcopalian and Catholic churches in America, any church that did and or is still doing these crimes against children and others, their money is cannot be used to sustain themselves because that's what's called the Convention on Transnational Organized Crime. A transnational criminal body like the Vatican that launders money for the mob, its money is forfeited under international law. So you have every right to go in and take it because they're using it for criminal purposes. So, you know, we also go to the police and say, we're going to do this. Why don't you come along and make sure that it happens in an orderly manner? Now, let's see the church try to stop it. Let's get the media down there and say, oh, well, why doesn't the local priest want to hand out money to the poor? Isn't that why you're getting tax exemptions? Isn't that why you're in existence? You can turn it into a great theater that exposes these people. And don't forget, these churches are the most easily exposed corporations in the world. Their credibility is hanging down around their ankles. And they're naked. We just have to push it, and they run for cover. We showed that in the residential school thing. We occupied the churches. Within a few months, they're issuing apologies. So, you know, that's where you can get them by the cojones.
Yeah, I think so. One of my favorite from the Church Stoppers manual is attending Bible class and asking participants to point out where popes, sacraments, or the Trinity are mentioned anywhere in the Bible. And I've never done that, but I've done something very similar to it. And when people react, they typically react in a very negative and hostile way because most of them have never really picked up the Bible, opened it up, and read any of it. They've just kind of gone through what the preacher said to open up to, and they got his interpretation. So, you know, education in that sense can be very, very, very key.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, you can have great fun with these guys. A lot of these priests, especially Catholic priests, don't know the Bible at all, and you can run rings around them. Here's another one I like, point 14. Do some research and find out what insurance companies underwrite the local church, especially the Catholic Church. Then you occupy the office of these insurance companies and accuse them publicly of aiding and abetting child killers and demand that they stop. Now, this is how you can really get them, because the one thing the church is worried about is their insurance coverage. Not just their money, but the fact that they don't want to lose their shirts. They want to be protected individually from any lawsuits. So they are worried if they lose their insurance coverage, they fold. And I think that people, if they really want to go after these genocidal churches and these child trafficking churches, they should find out who are their financial underwriters and their insurance companies and go after them.
Absolutely. And there's another one here. It says, I think it's pretty funny, get up in a Catholic service and ask why the priest, or why people have to call the priest father. Does he have a kid stashed away somewhere? And hasn't he read that Jesus says, quote, call no one on earth your father, for you have only one father in heaven. That's a very interesting point to bring up.
Oh, yeah. They go livid when you raise that one. I mean, it's really funny.
But anyway, I think that this Church Stoppers manual is a really good set of, I think there's 30 key points here, things that you can do in the local community. You know, obviously getting together with other people and not doing it by yourself is key, as you've mentioned many times. But sometimes people that are set back, as you mentioned earlier, and are very passive, they're ready to take action, but they're very passive about it. They're afraid of what's going to happen. I think you've demonstrated on more than one occasion that in a lot of cases, police back down And you've even got the church to issue apologies. And I mean, it was because of people like you that the TRC was even formed in the first place. Even though it was a type of whitewash, it was nevertheless an admittance of guilt that had been denied for so long. I mean, people don't really need to sit back and use that as an excuse anymore, that there's no one taking the lead, because people like you, people like me, we are taking the lead. And I think everybody else is on an equal playing field. You just have to step up to the plate, and you have to do what you have to do in the local area.
Absolutely. So, you know, to all the listeners, take these ideas and act on them. Don't wait for us. Don't wait for a central leadership, because you are the central leadership once you're awakened. And we're doing our best to help awaken people. Like I say, we're going to put a real focus on training and education of the leaders, of the local cadre or organizers in the period coming up over the next year, especially because we have the interest, we have the people, but we need the organized leadership. But to have that, you need conscious people who are trained, and that's going to be a big focus. So republicofcanada@gmail.com, keep those emails coming in. We are gradually spreading like a mustard seed, like yeast in a loaf. I love those images he used. That's another one I want to throw out there, by the way. Jesus said that heaven is like a mustard seed that spreads through a garden and takes it all over. Well, what people don't realize is back then a mustard seed was very noxious. It was a weed, and it took over all the garden and killed everything. And that was his image of what the kingdom of heaven is, this new society. And I'm just thinking, what if his listeners were farmers, they'd think, what the hell is this guy talking about? The kingdom of heaven is like a weed that chokes everything else and stinks. Well, that's, you know, it's the smallest of seeds, and yet it takes over everything. That's what an idea does. That's what a principle does, and an energy is, it's non-stoppable, and that's what the rulers really fear about, that people are going to give into that energy and allow themselves to be part of it and not adhere to the status quo. So I love these images. I mean, they're so descriptive.
As we come up on the end of the show for today, though, is there anything that we have coming up in the future, anything that we should probably let people know about?
Well, like I say, just to reiterate, in Canada, there's if people want to be involved in propagandizing around the October 19th election, how people should not only not vote, but vote for the Republic, please contact us. Also, folks in America want to be part of these actions in Philadelphia, New York, and Washington, D.C. to take away the Pope's energy, if you like, to create this counter force while he's here. Please contact us, because that's in the works as we talk. Also wanted to flag the fact that we have a lot of requests now coming in America for having me and others come down and give workshops on what a republic would look like in America, because, of course, you guys have lost it as well. We never had it in Canada. You once had at least the idea of what a common law republic is supposed to be. We've got a lot of interest all over. A revival of an attempt about 10 years ago to do that in America. There's, especially in the Midwest and on the West Coast, we're having a lot of requests. So that's really encouraging. And if people want to be involved in this, please, again, write to us, republicofcanada@gmail.com, and just stay tuned here every week and keep writing to us.
I wonder if, I don't know if anybody could help us with this, or maybe you know, Kevin, but it might be too obvious to happen here when the Pope comes to D.C. and Philadelphia, but I wonder if we could find kind of a list of where he's going to be to see if there's ever a time where he's sort of off radar, and if there is maybe some type of extracurricular activity taking place in Philadelphia or in a D.C., kind of like a couple of years ago during the presidential election here, where we had Obama, before he was president, kind of whisked off out of nowhere off the campaign trail. They lied to a bunch of press members of where he was going, and he ended up at a Bilderberg meeting, at these secretive meetings with these heads of corporation come, and they make these decisions on what's going to happen in the world before it actually happens, way outside of government jurisdiction. So it just makes me think maybe there'll be another kind of a meeting like that with Pope Francis, whether
right.
It's on an issue of Agenda 21, or maybe there'll be even going as far as saying that maybe there's a sacrifice that might take place.
Well, that's important to talk about, and we actually have some sources that are pointing us to two things. In Philadelphia, he's attending this Catholic conference on the family. We know that these conferences are usually a way for child traffickers within the Catholic Church to meet up and to coordinate their actions. So that is going to be watched, and his movements are being monitored. And also when he's in Washington, the night of the 23rd and 24th, as you know, that's a significant night during the month when these satanic rituals tend to happen. We don't think it's accidental he's there in Washington that night. We're going to have more on that in upcoming shows, you know, leading up to September.
Okay, great. Yeah, that was just a thought that came to mind. I thought it would be pretty interesting and pretty important to keep tabs on him in that manner.
So, Ryan, give folks your website and times of your show again, and then we'll sign off until next week.
Yeah, absolutely, Kevin. Tonight, I actually have a really great show lined up. It starts at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. I have author of Population Control, How Corporate Owners Are Killing Us, the award-winning journalist Jim Mars, is joining me for about 2 hours. And the final hour, I will be talking about sustainability part 5 and an ongoing series about biodiversity, sustainability, and of course Planned Parenthood gets tied in with that as well. So that again tonight is at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. My website, where you can get a couple of links because it airs multiple places, is thesecretteachings.info. That's www.thesecretteachings.info.
Thank you, Ryan. And just a final note as well to remind folks that our work is now being broadcast in 9 states in America through public television. We have community television networks broadcasting to millions of people, playing not only these programs, but other broadcasts that the Republic of Kanata has done. So follow our kanatarepublic.ca website. Write to us, Republic of Kanata, K-A-N-A-T-A, at gmail.com. And we will be back here next Sunday, 6 p.m. sharp. Until then, folks, stay clear and stay strong.